This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
Teams play Stammer like that all the time. With Cooch, he's able to find Pointer. And when Pointer's on the outside, it's a different look. So they could kind of, the middle isn't as dangerous of a shot because Pointer's not there. So I think that's probably why they shaded a little bit more towards Stammer. But like I said, it's just going to be supporting each other. I mean, we have one extra guy. You have to find ways to two-on-one the PK. And today was a good practice. I thought we made good steps in the right direction.
Get that power play going, Alex Killorn, for sure. We talked about that yesterday on the show. It is Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. I am Greg Linelli, along with Dave Mishkin. Steve Versnick is our producer. Connor McGahee, he is the radio play-by-play man for the Avs, will join us in about 20 minutes. We are recording this show, so if news regarding Alex Barry-Boulay hits and the Lightning claim him and we're not talking about it, you will know why. But as we sit here, Dave, and record this show a couple of hours before our live hit with Power Lunch typically airing, Barry-Boulay, the buzz yesterday that he was waived. And I thought,
how many times did I say I didn't know if it was going to happen, but I said I would not be surprised. Or maybe Lucas said he would not be surprised. And I said, didn't I say that? And I said something else. Needless to say, it was a possibility that Barry-Boulay would go back on the waiver wire. And I just want to say we have sent out inquiries for confirmation on something that was getting bandied about on Twitter yesterday.
Cap-friendly weighing in, huh?
Cap-friendly weighed in on a separate question. It's the same question, separate incident. I think Montreal was potentially going to reclaim a player. It's actually Noah Juulsen, so they weren't going to reclaim him. Juulsen was traded to Vancouver by Florida. I think it was Juulsen, and I guess Juulsen may have been put on waivers, but Barry-Boulay was the only guy yesterday. But Cap Friendly's response was, contrary to what we had thought and what we heard from Eric and Joe Smith had written this, we had thought that if you lost a player on waivers and then that player subsequently was put back on waivers, you then had first crack at that player. Cap Friendly said that is not the case. It goes through the traditional waiver process. However, and this is something Eric did say, that if no other claims are put in, you can claim that player back and send him straight to the minors, which makes sense because putting a player through waivers would mean that if no team claimed him, you could send him to the minors. So he basically would have gone through waivers and nobody claimed him but you, and then you sent him to the minors. I don't think, and again, we're speculating here, but I don't think if the Lightning put in a claim for Barry-Boulay and they get him, and our inquiry is, which is it? Is it that the Lightning get first crack or that they're in a queue and they're going to have to hope that if they put a claim in, nobody ahead of them in the queue puts a claim in for him? But if they put a claim in for him and if they get him back, things have changed from the time that they put him on waivers originally. Nikita Kucherov is on long-term injury. So if they put a claim in for him, Greg, and they get him, I mean, I don't know. I would guess that he's not going to the minors, that he would stay with the Lightning.
Talk about, talk about a guy who goes from a couple of days where he isn't sure he's going to be playing at the NHL level, doesn't know who's going to take him, to possibly being taken by the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs and being thrown at a top six role. I mean, that's how weird this situation can be. And as a professional, you know, Dave, this is the stuff that a lot of people don't realize. You've got to keep yourself probably mentally motivated in addition to being physically sharp. But Barry-Boulay is going from one end of the spectrum to the other if the Lightning are able to reclaim him. Now,
like,
to your
from
point,
his perspective,
yes,
he may end up potentially back with the Lightning, playing in a top six role potentially with the Lightning, or he may end up in the AHL playing for Seattle's affiliate.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I want to say, are they with Charlotte this year? That would seem weird, but
I'd have to look.
I got to look up and see who their affiliate
I've
is.
Look. Yeah, that would be tough. And, you know, Seattle, we talked about this before, maybe getting some guys back, Dave. And, you know, I guess in fairness, was that a lot of a – was that
no.
enough sample size for
it
them?
It wasn't.
Yeah, was it enough sample size for them to look at Barry Boulay and say, yeah, this is a player? To me, that's the odd part about it. I don't know. You bring a guy in, you don't play him that much. Was it just it, to me, it probably spoke more of an insurance policy
yeah.
than anything else. But, you know, for a franchise I thought that was looking for some upside talent-wise, that might have been a gamble worth exploring a bit more. So we'll see how that all plays out. To your point, Dave, we've got some text messages into the higher-ups. We'll see if they get back to us in a timely manner. And
these rules are... they are known by some, but it's not like they're readily available. It's not like we can access the fine print in the CBA. Right. Maybe we can, but I don't know how you would do that. I don't know if it's a privileged document. It probably isn't, but somebody knows how to find out this information.
I tell you what, it's a privilege.
Let us know. But the fact that all these reporters don't seem to have the right information and Cap Friendly does, like I wouldn't be surprised if Cap Friendly, because that's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. They get into the nooks and crannies of the CBA relating to the cap. They understand all of these different elements that even if you had the document, I think, speaking personally, I would have a hard time understanding. So good on Cap Friendly. And my hunch is that if they put it out there, it's probably accurate. But we're checking with the Lightning to confirm
what
that.
Happens there. So... that was kind of the interesting.
And Steve news. Told us Charlotte is the Seattle affiliate this year. Palm Springs will be the affiliate next year. Boy, there are worse places to play hockey than Palm Springs, California.
Life is pretty good. Life is pretty good down there for sure. So that was maybe some decent news in an otherwise pretty slow news day for the Lightning. I mean, we had talked about, you know, some personnel changes, maybe moving some guys up and down the lineup. Power play might look a little different. But the Avalanche, Dave, another loss last night to the Panthers, who were off to a really good start. And the Avs are now 1-3.
They had something like 23 shots in the second period, Florida. Because it looked like they got off to a little bit of a slow start, and it's 1-1 after one, and they just flexed their muscle.
They did.
Looks like in the second period, and it became a 3-1 game, and that was basically it.
Yep. I mean, look, we've talked about this with the Panthers. They're a really good team. Yep. Bobrovsky got his 300th career win.
About that? Did you see that stat that I guess he's the second fastest goalie to 300 wins?
Really?
I don't know if that's time sensitive, like incredible. Over a certain period of time, but frankly, I was surprised to see that.
Yeah.
Like the guys behind him, Fleury, for example, took more games. Fleury played a lot and played on some really good teams, in the early years of his career.
Yeah, with the Pens. But
I'm going to look that up and see some of the other players that were on there.
Good for him. That, you know what, to me, when we talk about the Panthers, I do, Dave, doesn't it feel like that's going to be one of those scenarios when they do get to the playoffs that it's just going to go with whichever goaltender is playing well at the time?
Well, that's way
that
down
feeling.
The road, Greg.
I know.
Who knows? But
I just get that feeling. You know, I mean, Bobrovsky is – let's put it this way. Bobrovsky, and I don't think it's a coincidence with Spencer Knight being in the lineup now and being the goaltender of the future, that it's making Bobrovsky a better future in the present.
Yeah. I will say this, though. This contract albatross –
yes.
And whether Bobrovsky plays well enough to win the Vezina or not, it's still a tough contract that the Panthers have, particularly made tougher by the fact that they have this stud prospect in net who's making, let's be honest, like 1/10 the amount that Bobrovsky is.
Sure.
But if Bobrovsky has a Vezina-like season, maybe there would be a team out there that they would be willing to – to take
it's a win-win for
his
the
contract. Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Here are the numbers. So Jacques Plante, 300 wins in 521 games. Bobrovsky is second, and this is in NHL history. Mm. Bobrovsky got to that number in 541 games. Directly behind him, Andy Moog, which is Again, Andy that's a Moog. Little surprising because Andy Moog split a lot of time with
Boston,
Grant Fuhr,
Dallas.
So he missed out on some wins. Now, maybe, you know, if he didn't play, he didn't play. That doesn't count against him as a games played number if he was sitting on the bench. But that's impressive. And then Fleury is fourth with 547. Brodeur fifth, 548. Then you got Rask, Rene, Vernon, Lundqvist, Osgood. I'll say this. The Plant number, though, first of all, he did it in 20 fewer games than Bobrovsky. And second of all the guys on this list, maybe with the exceptions of Vernon and Osgood based on when they came into the league, and Moog, for sure, all these other goalies are getting wins through overtime in the shootout. That Plant, for much of his career, did not have. Now, in a six-team league, if you played on a dominant team, which Plant did, you know, there was less parity, so maybe that offsets it. But you know what I'm saying? Like, Plant did it without the benefit of any kind of shootout wins to add to his total. Those count.
Mm-hmm. It does.
But still, I was surprised to see that Bobrovsky is number two on that list. Fewest games played to 300 career wins.
He's had a roller coaster year, or career, I mean, you could say. I mean, he's been arguably the best goaltender in the game for a couple of years, you know, really when he was peaking. And then, I don't know if it was just, you know, different system, different staff, different players in front
of him. Well, the adjustment to Florida has not been a smooth one. Maybe as smooth as Bobrovsky would have liked. But, you know, last year he did have a good year numbers-wise. I mean, he and Driedger did very well during the regular season. It's just that in the playoffs they ended up having to use three goalies, which obviously wasn't the plan going into that series. I guess what I keep coming back to, Greg, is so I mentioned Fleury. Fleury played the vast majority of the games for Penguins teams that maybe after his first year in the league were regularly winning among the most number of games in a regular season. That fair?
Yeah,
I mean, there were some years they had more than others, but generally speaking, he was on a team that won a lot and he played a lot.
Yep.
Bobrovsky has played a lot, but it's not like those Columbus teams were, you know, among the league leaders in wins. And when he started his career in Philly, you know, he was kind of behind Ilya Bryzgalov. Remember that? And maybe he just was very efficient when he got in. He was able to win, but he didn't get as many games played in Philly. In Columbus, he did, though. I guess that's what I keep coming back to is, like, where did all these wins come from? Like, how was he able to get so many in relative to these other guys a short amount of time? How about Rask? Like, Rask has been playing on some incredibly good Bruins teams.
You think Rask and Bobrovsky, you'll love this question.
He's 11. He's only 11 more. So it's not like Rask got to the number in 552. Bobrovsky got there in 541. Go ahead.
Rask, Bobrovsky, Fleury, Hall of Famers?
That's a good question. Bobrovsky has not won a Stanley Cup. The other guys have. I think Fleury will earn consideration based on his longevity. And, I mean, maybe this year is going to be a really tough year for him and the Hawks. They haven't won a game yet, right?
No, they lost.
They lost again
last
night.
Yeah.
But up until this year, Fleury has shown to be able to win throughout his career. And I know he had a dip there in Pittsburgh when he lost the job and they eventually moved him to Vegas. And frankly, he lost the job, I guess, in Vegas too, but that really wasn't due to, you know, him playing poorly and having bad numbers. They just wanted to play the other guy more, I guess. But it's kind of like the Andrechuk situation, which Lightning fans know well. Like, people said against Andrechuk, well, you know, he never had a year. Like, he didn't have the 5 to 6 years that, say, Lindros had, where he was one of the most dominant players in the game. And that may be true, although in Andy's defense, not that he needs it, you know, he had some really productive years in the prime of his career and scored a lot of goals. There's no doubt. I mean, he's still, for now, the league leader in NHL power play goals. But I think that Andy found a path of consistency and longevity. I mean, how many years was it? I don't think he got to it his final year, but it was something like, I'll have to look this up after I say it because I'm going to get it wrong, but he was like 15 years or more of 20 goals per year plus. Like, Lindros didn't do that.
I love the Hall of Fame debate because...
But I think that that's worthy, like what Fleury has done, if you're going to say, all right, and he has won the Vezina, and he has won multiple Stanley Cups. The first one, he was the main guy. The next two, you know, he had a role in, for sure. But, like, the body of work, longevity and consistency, I think should work in your favor.
See, it's I think
some
it's
guys can't control it. If they get an injury, you know, longevity becomes difficult. But it's not their fault. It's not Andrzejczyk's fault.
No.
That he was, you know, so, able to persevere and play as long and be as productive as he was.
With
in fact,
Dave,
it's a credit to him.
With Dave and with Fleury, you cannot discount the numbers they put up. They
total
me,
numbers you're talking
total
about.
Total numbers.
Yeah.
You automatically get in because of those numbers. My benchmark has always been
But Andy
this.
Didn't. I mean, how many years was he on the outside looking in?
I know. No, I know. And I think the reason, this is my second point, the reason is, and this goes against them, and look, I as you know, from Pittsburgh and followed Fleury closely, I also think you need to be considered one of the best for an extended period of time.
So that's the Lindros argument.
Yes, right? And it was always my, not you know, for guys like Hines Ward in football. Hines Ward, a really good receiver. I never thought Hines Ward was considered the best for an extended period of time, although he may get eventually in. I know it's a different sport. My point is, with Marc-Andre Fleury, he's going to have the numbers. So even if you didn't think he was one of the most dominant goaltenders of his era, I can't dispute 3 Stanley Cup rings, close to 500 wins, and a Vezina trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to get in regardless of the argument. I think for a guy like Bobrovsky, it'll be harder unless he plays longer and accumulates a ton of wins. Like, you know, Pecorine is probably another good example.
Yeah.
He's at 369.
No cup, though. I mean, the cup,
no cup.
The cup matters.
It's a big deal.
I think
it
cup
does.
Adds to it.
It does.
By the way, listen to this for Andrzejczyk. So his first year in the NHL, which actually he split it, interestingly, yeah, between the OHL and Buffalo. He played 43 games. He did not get to 20 goals. From that point onward, his first full season, 83-84, up until his last full year, which
yeah,
was the cup year, because he only played half a season in 05-06, so I'm excluding that season. So from 83-84 to 03-04, he hit 20 goals every year but 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of the 2 years that he didn't hit 20, I mean, those 2 years he was playing for the Devils, so maybe that's,
yeah,
something to do with it. They were so focused on defense. But one of those years he had 15 goals, he missed 30 games.
Right.
So I think if he had stayed healthy, he probably would have gotten to 20. The year before, 97-98, he had 14 goals in 75 games. But still, you talk about consistency, and I'm including, look, he was in his prime at this point, but 94-95, which was a shortened season, 22 goals.
Yeah.
You know, there was another year, like the year he had in Buffalo the second time before he signed with the Lightning, that team was not good.
Mm-hmm.
2000-2001, he played 74 games, he still scored 20 goals.
Yeah.
In he played a lot, but he didn't play a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure,
he had the games played, but he was not used as much as he had been earlier in his career. He still got to 20. So that speaks to this notion of, can you do it? Can you do it consistently? And how long can you do it?
I agree. It's a fun debate.
Yeah.
And it's, I know a lot of you, our audience, sometimes we get into these debates with certain players. And I think it's always fun just sometimes take a step back and look at guys' careers and where they are right now. All right, we got to get to our only guest today, Dave. We're going to get a little perspective on the Avs and what's going on there. Because, listen, we talk a lot about the Lightning and maybe not getting off to the best start. But the Lightning have also won back-to-back cups. And I think there's a little bit less pressure on them to fulfill and live up to expectations than possibly the Colorado Avalanche, at least this year. And Connor McGahee, he's the radio play-by-play man, will talk about that. Where is Colorado right now? What should we expect tomorrow night at Amalie Arena? We'll do that next when we return on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, glad you're with us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Happy Friday to you. Greg Linnelli with you, along with Dave Mishkin. Steve Versnick is our producer. Joining us right now, he is the radio play-by-play man for the Colorado Avalanche. Let's welcome to the program Connor McGahee. Connor, great to be with you, bud. And I know the Avs had a tough loss yesterday. Dave and I were talking about this on the show, I think it was yesterday, about kind of the cutoff date for certain broadcasters, writers, or even players and coaches, where you really get an idea of the identity of your team for a particular season. It's still very early, but do you have a certain date in mind where you're looking at the calendar and saying, you know what, 25, 30, 35 games in, that's kind of how I am going to judge this Avalanche team?
Greg, it's so funny you mentioned that, because when we were flying into Tampa last night after the game, I was thinking about that very subject. And I think I was probably around 25, to be honest, because there are so many things that are out of your control. I think in the Avs' case, they've had an incredibly jumbled start to the season. Nathan MacKinnon couldn't play the first two games. Landeskog played the first one, but then was suspended for the next two games. Devon Taves hasn't played yet as a top D pair with Cale Makar. I mean, on and on and on. But that's sort of been the Avalanche's story over the past three seasons, really, is I think the amount of games where they've had a full, complete lineup, as it's designed to be by Joe Sakic, is around 10, I think, which is an incredible, incredible number. I mean, don't quote me on that, but it's very, very low. But I think for a team like Colorado, who's the mix of players is designed to be fast and smart, but also play the right way, and that involves chemistry, and they haven't been able to generate that yet, and you just hope that they can get maybe Devon Taves back. We don't know. We'll see if he's in red non-contact sweater today at practice. If it was thrown out there that maybe he could play by the end of the road trip, if he's back in and the Avs finally settle in with a lineup that they're supposed to have. So I think that given those variables and given strength of schedule and that sort of thing, I mean, what a tough first road trip for Colorado. Washington, Florida, and then the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. I mean, that's not easy. So I think given time and all the variables, you're right, probably 25 or 30 games is a good marker to finally say, okay, where is this team at? Do they live up to expectations, or do they have a lot of work to do?
Like the Lightning, the Avs lost some players during the offseason. One of them came to the Lightning, Belmar, but you know, you factor in Jonas Donskoy and Brandon Saad, and you know, it does start to add up. But I think the one that caught everyone around the league by surprise was the fact that Grubauer signed as a free agent with Seattle. Why do you think he decided to go to Seattle and not re-sign with Colorado after a Vezina finalist season last year?
Sure, and he deserved, Dave, to be a Vezina finalist. But my while I didn't have a chance to ask him directly, my thought is this. Grubauer started that Stanley Cup run with Washington in 2018. Holtby took over, but he still got a cup ring. But he earned enough looks to be able to come to Colorado and get the nod and play well and be a number one and show that he can be a number one. And without a doubt, he deserved to be a Vezina finalist last year. So I think for him, I think the opportunity to get a deal with term and at more money than the Avalanche could probably give him was something he couldn't pass up at this point in his career, because if you think about it, there's really no other team in the league that could afford to do that kind of term, especially on a goaltender. So you get the combination of point in career with term with amount of money. I think it just might have been an opportunity that Grubauer felt like he could not pass up. He's got his championship ring. He's got his Vezina nomination, and maybe he said, look, this is how I am going to have an opportunity to take care of things. It's it's too good to say no to.
Connor McGahey joins us here on Lightning Power Play, Avs radio play-by-play man. Connor, we've talked so much about who needs to step up a little bit for the Lightning with a guy like Kucherov being out of the lineup. We've talked about the Avs struggling a little bit out of the gate, dealing with some injuries themselves. Who do you think you're going to be looking to provide a bit more offense for this Avs team?
Greg, there are kind of two names that come up when this question is asked, and two guys that have been around the team for a long time. And I think now with the absences of Brandon Saad, Yanis Donskoy, when you're talking about that volume of goals, I mean, 40-plus goals between the two of them probably in a regular season, Tyson Jost and JT Compher. Tyson Jost has sort of had to amend his game a little bit. He's a number 10 overall pick out of the University of North Dakota. And when you're drafted that high, same with Valeri Nichushkin, you're expected, I think, by a lot of people to be like the 30-goal scorer type. And that just hasn't worked out for him. So he's changed his game to be sort of this hell-on-wheels forechecker, skate your face off and just annoy you type. And he's been on a line with Logan O'Connor, who does the same thing, and Darren Helm, who does the same thing. They've been the Avs' best line over the past three games, and hopefully they can generate some offense for that. But I think the number one name to answer the question would be JT Compher. He's making $3.5 million a year, and he's been all over the place. He's been a fourth line winger, he's been a third line center, up on the top power play now with McKinnon and Rantanen, Landeskog, Cale Makar, Kadri is down on the second power play unit. So when you're getting that type of ice time in those type situations, you do have to produce. And he has so far tied for the team lead in points with four. Going into last night, him and Nazem Kadri, two goals and two assists for JT Compher, including a shorthanded goal. It's fourth all-time in shorthanded goals in franchise history, one behind Stefan Yell. So, but he definitely has to be a lot better, does JT Compher.
One other guy I didn't mention from last year's team that is no longer on the Avalanche, defenseman Ryan Graves. That might have been a protected list situation where they moved him to the Devils. But I remember visiting back when we were traveling, Connor, way back when, I remember coming to Denver and hearing you guys rave about Ryan Graves. And he was plus 40 a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
How impactful was he for the Avs, and how big of an absence has he left since the trade?
Dave, I think part of the reason that we were doing that because it came as a surprise to a lot of people. I mean, he was involved in a trade with the New York Rangers, Chris Bigras going the other way, and Bigras, a little bit of a smaller defenseman, which we had plenty of, and we just needed some size. So Graves comes over from the Rangers organization and really surprises a lot of people. And he was sort of, when Eric Johnson over the past couple of years had been injured a lot, he was the perfect guy to replace Eric Johnson. Size, the ability to kill penalties, that kind of thing. And you're right, led the NHL in plus minus. The Avs have done that with a player the last 2 years. Mikko Rantanen did it last year. But for Graves, I think the fact that we couldn't stop talking about him was because he maybe wasn't supposed to be that good. He was a surprise to everybody in what he brought and how he could play. And the reason that he had to depart was now because the Avalanche defensive core is so good, it was either get something for him or let him walk for free to Seattle, because I think they had an inkling that Ron Francis was going to select him. So they get Mikhail Maltsev and a second-round pick back from the New Jersey Devils, and I think that's a good piece of business for Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland, because when you have Bowen Byram as a Calder Trophy candidate this year, obviously you got Cale Makar, Girard, Eric Johnson is in fact back, and he's a difference maker. You don't – Justin Barron is in the pipeline, 25th overall pick. In a lot of people's minds, he's a top 10 pick for Colorado. So when you have these type of players that are right there, you can afford to get some assets back for a player. And they add Ryan Murray on a one-year deal from New Jersey, actually, played the 1 year after spending most of his career in Columbus. And then Jack Johnson makes the team as a veteran presence on a PTO at a camp, sort of as an insurance policy to Devon Toews. So at the time, Ryan Graves was absolutely fantastic for the Colorado Avalanche, but I think the shelves are restocked back there at the moment defensively.
Connor McGahee joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. You know, Connor, one of the other podcasts that I like to listen to is that 32 Thoughts podcast, Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. And I'm sure you've read Elliot's notes and listened to the podcast. But one thing he had brought up, I don't think it was this previous one, but a couple of podcasts ago, when it came to Colorado and how they were one of the teams that seems like the last couple of years are in on some big names when it comes to free agency, that they maybe haven't landed them yet, but they are a team out there who's sniffing around and wanting to upgrade. Do you get the sense that's just because, look, this is a really good team and you have a certain amount of time to win with a core group of players because of the cap and you want to take advantage of that? I mean, is that something that you've also noticed as well? And do you feel like that's going to continue moving forward?
I mean, I would think so. I mean, I don't. They always know more than me. I mean, Dave will tell you I'm the last to know anything.
we are not invited into the general manager's office for these private discussions.
Hi, Joe. Mind if I come in and sit down for a bit? Yeah, thanks. I'll just make myself comfortable. Can I put my feet up? Great, outstanding.
That'd be great.
short of that, I think that they would not be doing their jobs properly if they didn't try and sniff around on some of those guys. Let me put it this way. On Saturday, we did a pregame ceremony and honored the late Pierre Lacroix, former general manager of the Colorado Avalanche. He passed away in December of 2020, and he was the architect of both of the Stanley Cup teams for Colorado 96 and 2001. And I think Pierre in particular was one of, if not the best, at looking for and landing the big fish. Obviously, you talk about one of the greatest trades in NHL history in 1996 when he gets Patrick Roy from Montreal. Not only does he get the greatest goaltender in the game, arguably at the time, but he gets Mike Keane, who's the captain of the Montreal Canadiens and is one of those other pieces that is able to come into the locker room and make everybody gel and win a cup in their first year in Colorado. And then you look at 2000 and 2001, Ray Bourque from Boston. Ray had plenty of other options, other teams that wanted to give him a chance to win a cup, but it was Pierre who was able to land him in 2000, and they win the cup with him, and I guess you could say for him, the next year in 2001, after they acquired another big fish, and that's Rob Blake on the blue line. Now, they had to give up things for Rob Blake, Adam Deadmarsh, Aaron Miller. Deadmarsh had been with the team since Quebec, but the fact was is that they saw a need, and it was a signal to the team that we're going for it. We are right here. We can get it. We can, as Dave has eloquently put it, we can reach the top of the mountain. Sound familiar? So I think that is sort of maybe ingrained in Joe because he's obviously the captain of both of those teams. So it's sniffing around, yes, and I think maybe when the time is right, they'll be able to pull the trigger because you're right. There's only a certain amount of time that you have available inside your window with the core group that you've built over the course of a decade plus that you can win. So I'd be interested to see if this year or next, if that's one of those years where a trigger is finally pulled.
Last one for me, Connor. Playoff losses can be excruciating, and it's often difficult to go back and re-examine them.
Not
and
like you'd know anything about that.
Well, we do, because the Lightning had a lot of deep runs that ended with difficulty, and the point I'm making is after they got swept by Columbus, I think they had to look in the mirror, and they made some changes not only in terms of how the team was constructed, but how the team felt they needed to play.
Right.
And sometimes you just lose because – the bounce of the puck doesn't go your way or the other team finds a higher gear. But as you look back at these last two seasons specifically, like, what is your sense about the postmortem? Like, what went sideways for the Avs? And is there something that fundamentally needs to be corrected or adjusted moving forward?
It's a good question. And I mean, they've exited in the second round. They haven't even gotten to the third round of the playoffs the last 3 years. Surprised a lot of people in 18-19 by as the last seed in, second wild card team beating Calgary. And not just beating Calgary, they did it in five games. And then they take the San Jose Sharks to 7. That was the Gabe Landeskog offside game. So I would chalk that up as unlucky, because if Landeskog isn't trying to get off the bench and sit down with his foot inside the zone, then Colin Wilson scores, the game is tied up, and the momentum goes the other way, and the Avalanche can likely win Game 7 in San Jose. Then you have the bubble versus the Dallas Stars, and they just, everybody was hurt. They're on their tertiary option when it came to goaltending, and Michael Hutchinson, both Grubauer and Pavel Francouz injured. No Eric Johnson. You didn't really have anybody, so you could say that that's unlucky as well. But you go to last year and the Vegas Golden Knights, and a couple things. Physically, it seemed to be like the Avalanche sort of disappeared. They were overshadowed by how Vegas was able to physically play the game. And I think that's why they got guys like Darren Helm and Curtis McDermott, guys who can help out in that regard. I mean, even Ryan Murray and Jack Johnson, if the time comes. But ultimately, when you have players like McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, Makar, they are your anchor points, and they are the engine room. And if they don't function at their highest capacity, when it's on the line, then you're not going to win. And that was the case in that Vegas series last year, second round versus the Stars before. So are they some of the best players in the National Hockey League? Yes, but I think they know especially that when it comes crunch time, they have to perform at their best, and frankly, they just haven't. They need to play that all-around game, as Jared Bednar has liked to say, and maybe this is the year where they have learned enough lessons to make that adjustment.
Connor, last question overall. I mean, the good teams are going to have a lot of players participating, we think, in the Olympics. Is that something you're going to keep an eye on when it comes to the high-end guys, how much they're playing? What's that stress level on them physically and mentally during the lead-up to the Olympics and then after the Olympics, how they're feeling? I think it's great for the league in many ways to showcase these players, but it also, I think, if you're a fan, general manager, I'm sure you're probably looking at that and saying, maybe I'd prefer not these guys to be participating.
Yeah, I think the latter is absolutely correct. And it's not like the games are in Salt Lake City or Vancouver, right? I mean, you got to go half a world away into extremely stressful circumstances. And so that's why it's going to be fascinating to see. I think the lead up to it, NHL coaches and GMs will be thinking like, look, I mean, the Olympics are nice, but we're here to win our trophies. We're here to get our points in the bag. So I think leading up to it, it's going to be business as usual. The return, I think, will be the most fascinating thing. When you have to, again, come back from 37 time zones away. Yeah, I know it's not 37. You know what I mean. But
yeah. And, well, it feels like 37.
Do we even have 37 time zones? And then when you're playing that much, especially the teams that make it to the gold medal game, I mean, what happens after those 3 weeks? So, yeah, it's going to be very unique and interesting, assuming that it still goes forward. But I would expect that NHL coaches and GMs to say, hey, you know, good for you that you made it, but this is your primary objective here.
Yeah, it's I think it's one of the biggest storyline this year in many ways. Yeah. For a lot of these teams trying to make a deep run in the playoffs this year. So we'll see how that plays out. Well, Connor, great job as always, bud. I'm sure it's fun being on the road again, broadcasting in buildings and seeing other teams you haven't seen maybe in a couple of years. And we'll
yeah, I'm just
we'll
glad
see
to not rink. See the St. Louis Blues again. I can't even tell you.
Well, we'll catch you tomorrow, and have a great call tomorrow.
Thanks,
all
Connor.
Right,
appreciate
it. See you around the rink.
You got it. All right, that is Connor McGahey joining us here on the show. He's the radio play-by-play man for the Colorado Avalanche. And that's
he did a great
good.
Job on that interview.
Yes.
Greg, I mean, he really, as he should, he knows his team inside and out, but he communicated all those key points so clearly and on point.
Yep.
Like, just talking to him, I feel I am much more informed about what's going on with the Avs.
I think it's because of the questions that were asked. They were great questions.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's it.
What do you think? You know, yes. You got to get that information.
and another, I've been doing a lot of mea culpas.
Yes.
But I can't let an error that I make on the air go uncorrected. I said, I don't know why Landeskog hasn't played the last couple of games. I totally forgot he was suspended. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that until I read it. But that is one of those things where, like, last year I just got in the habit, if I saw some player safety involving a player on a team outside the Lightning's division, it was like, I don't know, in one eye and out the other. Yeah. Like, went into my brain and went right back out. So I need to get back in shape to be like, okay, Landeskog is out. Lightning are playing Colorado, you know, where, coming up here.
You know where you're going to have time to do that? Not that you don't when you're at home, but like when you're on the road. You know, if you're in your hotel room and you're like, all right, I got a couple hours here. Let me browse, you know? Just don't go on Twitter too much, Dave. Don't go down that rabbit hole.
No. And I haven't heard back from the Lightning yet about clarification on the waiver rule. So hopefully we get that before we sign off.
And for our audience, too, we are taping this show. So we just want to let them know that Barry Boulay is claimed by somebody. And Dave and I are, like, ignoring it. It's not because we're ignoring Barry Boulay. It's just...
Well, that's what happened when the Lightning put him on waivers and we pre-recorded. And we felt obliged to keep mentioning that we were recording in the morning. And then he wasn't actually claimed by Seattle until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Or like, well, that was dumb. We should have just not even said it. But
you know what, though?
I guess when we know we're going to pre-record, that's when Barry Boulay goes on waivers.
As I tell my
kids. For the next day.
Dave, as I tell my kids, it's better to tell the truth. Because really, you can feel good about yourself when you tell the truth.
Do you feel good telling everyone that you have no idea what's happening with
the
waiver wire?
Well, now we can't be called for being deceitful.
By the time we meet tomorrow at Amalie Arena, we will have 100% clarity on the Barry Boulay situation. Both, was he claimed by the Lightning? And maybe not just as importantly, but at least for me, it'll be illuminating.
Yes.
What is the situation for a team that is looking to claim a player back after they have lost a player on waivers?
For sure. It's always good to know, and we're trying to provide that information. One thing I can tell you is that all of the game call and the pregame tomorrow is going to be live. We will not be taping that.
Nice.
You will not be making up the game, Dave. You will be calling that live.
No, but I thought you were talking about like the pregame sound. So you're doing live interviews tomorrow. I think you're having – are you having Mike Chambers
on? Mike Chambers on from the Denver Post.
Because we had floated an invitation to him. He's like, I'd prefer to do it live. We're like, okay.
Yeah, and I can't blame him if he wants to see me up front and right there. And
he wants to sit in the seat occupied by Phil Esposito.
I mean, honestly, can you blame him? I really can't. Should we get some questions to end this wonderful week?
Yeah, let's do
it. Because I feel like we didn't get a chance to the last couple of days.
By the way, I just want to clarify one thing. You said it was not much of a news day yesterday. That was in terms of on the ice and maybe like hockey-related transactions. It was a huge day for Lightning players and coaches and management, though, because they got their rings.
It's true. That bling is pretty sweet.
Impressive. I've never heard of a ring, or maybe because I'm not that knowledgeable about rings, but the ring flips open. Did you see that?
No, it does.
They've got more info.
Yeah, the Bucks
on the inside.
Oh, wow.
Did the Bucks start that?
The Buccaneers,
they got the number one
the
bull in there. Can I say that?
Yes,
number one BS.
Yes, no, you can say that, Dave. I want you
Steve
to say
can
that.
Bleep that if he needs to.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Milwaukee Bucks both had tops that flipped open.
That's incredible. That's really cool.
So that's now the new thing. You can cram more information. Make it sound like that's not a good thing. It's a great thing. Like what they put on the inside, like a book, the inside front cover and the inside back cover, really cool.
Love that.
Number one BS was part of it, but not all of it.
I can't believe that made it, but in many ways that should have
been
a
signature.
It was a signature
part of
moment.
The win.
It was.
Process over outcome, which Coop said a lot in the locker room, if I'm saying it right. That was basically what he meant, though.
And the last day of school, which is what the
last day of school,
how they referred to the team is because they knew some of it was going to break up.
Every player number was on there. Mm.
Beautiful.
Good stuff.
Now, I skimmed through the CBA while you were talking to Connor McGahee.
Oh, so you found it. Okay.
Yes, yes.
We don't need the Lightning to tell us, Steve.
Yeah. Well, I skimmed it.
What
I'm not saying I read every word, but
yeah,
there is no priority to the team that lost a player.
Okay.
So, but if you're the only one who makes a claim and you do get the player, then you can send him to the minors without going through waivers again.
So it wasn't overly complicated. You found it in the span of like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And the waiver wire at this process is based on the regular season standings at the end of last season. So the Lightning
really?
Are not last.
Okay.
It's regular season points percentage standings. It's not the playoffs.
From last year, though, so it does not go into
until
the
November 1st.
Year.
November 1st is when it kicks into this year.
Okay.
So
the Lightning, if they get him, they're going to be the last team.
No.
It's regular season.
Related
to the Cup. So they're near the bottom.
Carolina, Florida, and I don't remember the other points for other divisions. Who had more? I think Colorado, Vegas.
Lightning,
Colorado, Vegas were the top two.
Yeah, what were the Lightning, like sixth, maybe sixth or seventh?
Something like that. So they're not the lowest priority to get the waiver claim, but they're low.
Here's the thing to keep in mind, though, folks, as we talk about this, which we may already have the answer by the time this airs, a team that claims him is going to need to keep him in the NHL, or else the same thing that happened with Seattle is going to happen again.
Correct.
So, and this is to the player's benefit. If you're going to get claimed, it's because the team that claims you really wants to see what you got at the NHL level.
And the benefit for the Lightning, they not only retain it, but they can send him down to the minors without clearing waivers.
If there is, so if Florida, let's say, I don't think Florida's going to claim him, but like to Steve's point, if a team put in a claim, but they are behind the Lightning in the queue, which is based on reverse order of regular season points or points percentage, because not every team played every game last year, right? Or did they? Can't remember.
I think they all did. Remember, they played some playoff regular season games.
So it's on
the playoffs started.
So reverse order of points in that order. If there's a team behind the Lightning in the queue that puts in a claim for Barry Boulay, they cannot send him directly to the minors without having to put him through waivers again. But I'm not certain that that would even be their preference at this point, like we talked about at the start of the show.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
Great work, Steve.
Very
informative. Well done.
All right, questions.
A couple of observations. Al, with just a comment, I'm trying to find a weakness on Florida so far. It's hard to find one. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty good.
Well, there is a difference. And sometimes there isn't a difference, but there are two separate categories. What does your team look like on paper? And how is your team actually playing? And Connor talked about that a little bit in the playoffs with Colorado. Like McKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, and Cale Makar are four elite players in the league. Mm-hmm. But if they don't perform at a certain level, the Avs are going to have trouble. Alexander Barkov is an elite player in the league. We know that. He is on the Panthers. So when Al looks at the roster and sees the names, you're like, it doesn't seem like they have any weaknesses. But it's not only that they don't seem to have any weaknesses. They are playing right now like a team that is not making errors. They are playing at an extremely high level, which is hard to maintain over 82 games. But if you can get off to a good start, you put yourself, like we talked about on the show yesterday, into a really good position. And also it kind of sets the table for how you're going to have a season, like what your season is going to look like, how you're going to play throughout the year.
Good point.
Sometimes teams that are built in a way that they look really good and they could be really good, sometimes are off. Sometimes they're not executing as well. And they have to figure it out.
No doubt. Let's get to Jake, not from State Farm. Says, the 20-game mark is when I really start considering what this team really is. Obviously, with Cooch out, they're not going to be as good. But if they have between 20 and 25 points, I really like our chances, especially knowing 86 will be back eventually.
So I'm curious at the end of this year to see if we go back to that 96-point marker.
Yeah.
Which we have talked about a lot. I've written about it a lot in case fans don't know about it. In an 82-game regular season, usually, as in nearly all of the time, if you get to 96 points in this current setup, the way the playoffs are structured, the way the points are distributed, if you can get to 96 points, you are going to make the playoffs. And then if you break it down into smaller segments, if you can get 12 points every 10 games – you'll be at 96 points after 80 games, and then you have a couple more in case you're a little short to add to it. And so when you kind of want to think about, like, because it's a marathon, right? So if you get off to a really good start at the beginning of the marathon, it's not like it's more likely you're going to get tired, right? It doesn't work that way. Like, the Panthers have done very well for themselves, as have these other undefeated teams. San Jose's 3-0. Buffalo's 3-0. Like, if they could keep it going, that means that they have a little bit more wiggle room to give away points later, because those points are put into the bank. But if you're just kind of like, where are we in the standings? How many teams are ahead of us? Like, if you just focus on, can we get 12 points out of this 10-game segment? We're on pace. History and math tell us that unless something really weird happens, 12 and 10 is going to get us where we need to get. At Basil's- this point, the Lightning have 4-4. But, yeah. You know, Al's point was, what did he say, 25 points after 20 games? That would get you there.
Jake.
But if you miss the mark, then you have to make up those points in subsequent segments, which becomes harder to do, right? Like, it's not easy to get 16 points in a 10-game segment. That means you're only dropping 4 points over 10 games. So that's why it behooves you to try and just hit that marker every segment.
A couple more comments and questions. Basil says, feeling okay about the first 4 games. This regular season will be a slow walk. As a Clevelander, it reminds me of the recent seasons with LeBron, a whole season figuring things out, just getting ready to dominate in the playoffs. It's not an easy journey. Go Bolts.
Well, I think he's right. It's not going to be an easy journey, and it's been complicated by some of these early season injuries. The Lightning, as we've talked about, they have a target on their back. They have the short offseason. The mental challenge of getting dialed in the way, let's say, the Panthers are dialed in right now, they look like a team that is dialed in. They are ready and raring to go. I'm not sure that we would say, and we got the sense even in the preseason, Greg, that the Lightning coming off back-to-back cups were quote-unquote ready and raring to go. I think that they are steeling themselves for a long, tough journey because they understand what it takes. But that long, tough journey is made harder by the fact that, what did Connor say? Tough trip for the Avs. They play the Capitals, they play the Panthers, and then the two-time Stanley Cup champs, defending champs. Like, that's how they're going to be viewed by every other team in the league, whether you're talking about another perceived contender like Colorado. I say perceived because people feel that they are a contender, as do I, even though they've gotten off to a 1-3 start. Or a team that finished near the bottom of the standings last year. They're going to get up to play the Lightning too. And then you factor in the short offseason, having to bounce back mentally, and these injuries.
For sure.
So I don't think it's surprising that we got that comment from, it wasn't Jake. I forget who it was. The third comment
Basil.
That you read.
Basil. Yeah.
Basil.
Yes.
But maybe the Lightning will be able to persevere through that. And by persevere, I mean, like, maybe it'll be a smoother regular season than maybe we might be inclined to expect based on what has happened the last 2 years.
For me, it's always...
And they have to bounce back as quickly as they do based on, you know, the short offseason.
It's weird to say this. I don't put a ton of stock in playing really well heading into the playoffs. I think it's nice to have. I think it's more of a storyline for some people to bring up more than others. I think with the Lightning, you give them the benefit of the doubt, even if they're not playing well towards the end of the year. As long as they get in the playoffs, I think this season's more about individual performances and their growth in helping this team and filling a certain role. You want to win as many games as possible, but think of this as a marathon, not a sprint.
I think
the Lightning may just have to take this one game at a time, that, you know, maybe they're going to take some punches this year to the face. But this is a championship team that's going to get off the mat, Dave, and they're going to figure it out. And you would think you give them the benefit of the doubt. All seasons aren't created equal, but when you're coming off back-to-back championships, there is a championship pedigree there that has to be, I think, acknowledged and admired. And we have to just, I think, look at this season more so about, for me at least, I want to see individual growth more so than, hey, the Lightning are in first place with the best points percentage in the league. If that happens, great.
Right.
But I'm not going to lose sleep if they do not accomplish that.
Well, what you just said there, they are going to figure it out, or they have to figure it out. They're going to take some time to figure it out. I agree with that. But what we have said on our show, Dave Randorf mentioned it yesterday, you need to be able to bank points while you're figuring it out.
Yes.
Because otherwise you might dig yourself a hole out of which it becomes very difficult to climb, which was Dave's response basically to your question about how many games. How many games until you get a sense of where your team is at? And you were talking, I think, more about like the team identity and what have you got here. And he answered that part of it, but he also talked about the math. Because if you drop that many points in the first 20 games, somehow you need to make up those points.
You do.
The rest of the way. And it becomes challenging based on the parity in the league to do that.
You're right about that. There's no doubt about that. All right, well, that's going to wrap up our show today. It was a lot of fun, Dave. We covered a lot of ground this week.
Yeah,
we also got into some topics outside of the Lightning, which I always like. I think, you know, when you have a few games, a few days off in between games, you've got to do that. And certainly our audience, I think, appreciates that. I hope you do, at least. If not, you can blow me up on Twitter if you want. I'll probably not read it if that's the case. But you know what? I will read it. I will. I promise you.
He's going to take all your Hall of Fame.
Why wouldn't we?
Who is worthy of getting in?
We're all worthy. But, Dave, I appreciate your work this week. We'll do it again next Monday, but I'll see you at the rink tomorrow.
Yep.
See you at the Lightning rink tomorrow. And Avs. All right. Thanks to Steve Versnick as well. We'll be on the airwaves tomorrow starting at 6 with Brian Burns and Bobby the Chief Taylor with their pregame skate show. I'll have the network pregame at 6:30. Mike Chambers will join me, so will Brian Burns. You'll hear from Dave Michigan and Phil Esposito, John Cooper as well, so we'll have you covered there. And then, of course, after the game, it's going to be Eric Gerlinson, I do believe, with Brian Engblom doing the last call, filling in for Jay Retcher. And we appreciate that as well. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. Listen to the broadcast tomorrow. And then we'll be with you again on Monday, noon to 1 on Lightning Power Play.